You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Now, co-leader of the Green Party, James Shaw, met up with me earlier in the studio this morning to discuss a few prominent election issues. Here's the audio. So the Greens released a statement on poor forestry regulations earlier this week. And I know you've spoken a bit about the need for a national environment standard for plantation forestry, but can you explain a little further what this means?
Yeah, I mean, the basic, forestry overall is a good thing, right? Because forests soak up carbon emissions, they're generally better for the land and so on. But what we're talking about here is specifically around plantation forestry. So the kind, pine forest that you're going to cut down in 15 to 20 years time for use in paper and other wood products, that's on really steep and erosion prone country, and so a lot of that land can't be used for much other than forestry. But it's much better if those are sort of permanent regrowth forests rather than pine forests, because when you cut it down, what happens is that allows the soil to kind of slip down into rivers and streams in the bottoms of the gullies, and we think that the standard that the government released earlier on doesn't address that.
So what kind of practical legislative measures are you proposing here?
Well, basically we're looking for a stronger environmental regulatory standard around plantation forestry. We also want to encourage more permanent carbon sink forestry on that really erosion prone steep country, and landowners can actually earn carbon credits as a result of doing that, and so it's kind of saying, well, Can we just have better standards around where your plantation forestry is and management of that plantation forestry?
Mm. And as you mentioned before, the plantation forestry does play a very important role, especially in providing jobs. So how would you go about regulating forestry whilst ensuring workers won't be facing unemployment?
Well, I mean, actually, our goal is to plant over 1.5 million hectares of forestry, especially erosion-prone forestry, around the country over the course of the coming decades. And that is got to be a mix of, permanent regrowth indigenous forest as well as plantation forestry. And plantation forestry actually soaks up carbon emissions faster than indigenous permanent forest. And so you do need to kind of have a mix of the two.
Right, but how will this ensure that workers won't face unemployment?
Well, precisely because you're looking at such a significant expansion of the forestry estate. So an additional 1.8 million hectares is a lot of forestry jobs, especially in the regions, and especially on iwi land as well.
Right, moving on. The People's Mental Health Report was released last week, sparking a call for an inquiry into New Zealand's mental health concerns. People are being turned away at crisis point because there simply aren't enough resources to handle these things. How do the Greens propose to address these concerns?
Yeah, well, look, we've been campaigning around the need for an inquiry into how we fund mental health services in this country for quite a long time now. One of my former colleagues, Kevin Haig, really led on this issue. My colleague Julianne Genter has picked that ball up and run with it. And back in the 1990s, there was a huge review into how the health system overall was funded, and that changed the nature of health funding, which has, kind of lasted for almost two decades now. And we think that we need to do the same for mental health services, because it's really clear that there's massive pressure on the service.
Mm. And like you said, Julianne Genter did mention, quote, a wide-ranging national inquiry into our mental health system. What kind of does this inquiry involve?
Well, the main thrust of it has actually got to be around how we fund it, because virtually all of the stories that we hear, you mentioned how long it takes for someone to get a referral. Well, once you've got a referral, how long it takes to get an appointment. In some parts of the country, that can be as many as 16 weeks, right? And if you're someone with, kind of severe mental health challenges, that is simply way too long. Those kinds of pressures are being produced really because there is a huge squeeze on funding.
Mm. Speaking of funding, she also cited the $1.7 billion number that's kind of been going around a bit that funding hole in the mental health sector that desperately requires filling. What are your plans to address that?
Well, I mean, so I don't want to get prescriptive, because we do want an independent inquiry to look into how mental health services get funded. But we do know that in mental health, as well as in the main body of health funding, as well as in education, Department of Conservation and so on, that the national government has actually run down core funding to those services over the course of the last 8 years, once you account for inflation. And so, you know, that number is one of the areas where we think that they've really put the squeeze on over the course of the last
So is this inquiry a priority for you then?
Yes, it is.
Okay. But then won't a subsequent rise in funding also be a priority?
Yes, because you have to assume that any inquiry worth its salt that takes a look into how the service is funded is going to recommend an increase, because it's just so obvious that the shortfall is putting such massive pressure on the service at the moment.
Won't you be compromising other priorities in funding the mental health sector, though?
Well, not necessarily. I mean, government is always, choices about where you prioritise your spending and so on. And you have to say that some of the things that the current government chooses to spend its money on are not the best use of money. The most recent example is the $53 million we're about to spend on a pavilion at the Dubai World Expo. Now, you could argue that that money might be better spent on the mental health of New Zealanders.
Okay. So you have a draft terms of reference ready and are encouraging the government to have a look at it. What exactly is a draft reference?
Well, terms of reference are when you set up an inquiry, what you need to do is you kind of give them a briefing and you say, well, here is the scope of the job. That's basically what terms of reference are. So we've got a sort of a draft of what that, you know, what that could look like. We have been saying to the government for some time now, look, this is getting urgent. People are suffering as a result of the lack of service here. It is important. We're asking for an independent inquiry, so it's not political. You know, it actually sort of takes it out of the hands of the government and out of the hands of the opposition, and says, look, you know, you get a group of experts together, they should be able to tell us where we need to go with this. And I guess our problem is that the government has been resisting doing that.
Now, 23% of the stories that made up the People's Mental Health Report also cited a massive strain on staff in the mental health sector. Is government-funded support a viable provision for them?
Staffing is a huge problem. And, you know, I know that, there are cases all over the country where, people are having to work ridiculously long hours. A lot of them suffer from, assaults and kind of violence from patients, and they're under tremendous pressure, and so again, part of that is a result of the funding shortfall.
And last week we also spoke to Mike King, who is one of the contributors to the report, and he told us that in New Zealand there seems to be this kind of late stage intervention as opposed to an early stage prevention. What are your thoughts on this mentality?
Well, I mean, I have to say that is true right across the health service in general, and actually one of the first things that the government did when they came in 2008 was they actually took money away from preventative health measures, not just in mental health but in physical health as well, and moved that money into things that were kind of more headline grabbing, and we have always had a saying, it's way better to put a fence at the top of the cliff than an ambulance at the bottom of the cliff, and so you actually end up spending less money by having good preventative public health measures than you do by having to invest in ambulances and so on at the bottom of the the bottom of the cliff.
And the report makes a few recommendations for appropriate measures that can be taken to address these concerns, one of which proposes the idea of a national education program. Is this something you take on board?
Yes, it is. I mean, it's certainly something that we're interested in looking at further. I mean, when it comes to public health and preventative health measures, actually education is a significant part of what that means. The most visible example is smoking, right, where you have a significant education educational aspect, both on the actual packets themselves, but there's, you know, advertising campaigns and so on to let people know about what the health impacts of smoking are. And so that shows that, you know, over the course of 3 decades, where you've had, you know, went from something like 65-odd% of New Zealanders used to smoke 30 years ago, now it's down to about 12 to 14%. And a lot of that is through education.
Wow. Okay. James, thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks today. For having me.
Hope you have a lovely day.
You too.
Lovely rest of your week. And I hope to see you sometime soon.
You will.
Can anyone explain why the modern day whales are so big?
The Wire. That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.